7:04 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the podcast. Adnan Virk from MLB Network, NHL Network, and the Cinephile podcast is going to join us in just a moment here to kick off hour two. Hour two is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio, Kintec Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec, to the phone lines we go. Adnan Virk joins us now on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Adnan. How are you?
We have a hockey stick.
I'm doing great, guys. How you doing?
We are well. Thanks for taking the time to do this. As always, we appreciate it. We are going to start with a little NHL talk, because we're going to have Katie Strang on the show in a bit to talk about the Coyotes to Utah move from the Arizona side of things. You spoke with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman last week about the Utah side of things. What did you glean from the commissioner about putting a team in Utah when you were speaking with him last week?
Well, it was amazing, Mike, because I got the call like Tuesday. My boss just said, hey, listen, we want you to go interview the commissioner. And I didn't really know what it was about. And then found out, lo and behold, okay, there's going to be a team in Utah. So I felt what was most interesting, what Gary emphasized, was the fact that this is not going to be an expansion franchise. He's like, this is going to be a new team. And I said, okay, it's not a relocation. And yet it kind of feels that way in that they're taking the players, they're just transferring them essentially from the Coyotes, personnel, et cetera, and moving them to Utah. The other thing was, it wasn't Salt Lake City. Like, it was very specifically that it was Utah, you know, just like the Utah Jazz are claiming the entire state, rather than just being city-specific. I also asked him about where they're going to play. So the Delta Center, which is where the Jazz play. So that's 12,000 unobstructed seats. He said, that's true, but they have plans for within a couple of years to get that to 17,000. So I said, all right, so it seems reasonable. And they could, by the way, have an option to build a greater stadium beyond that. Of course, part of it, too, is from the Coyotes' perspective. You know, I said, what's your message to Coyotes fans? The night before, we'd seen fans upset, emotional, et cetera. And he said, listen, they still have the option to get a team within 5 years, as long as there's a specific arena built. And he said, ultimately, can't keep playing in the Mullet Arena. You know, it's 5,000 people. That's just untenable for a hockey league, you know, a team at this level. So I think in some ways he was excited about Utah, and clearly it's new frontier. And I said, part of your stewardship has been putting hockey in non-traditional markets. You know, is that something you focus on specifically with regards to Utah? I said, well, yes and no. Yes, you're right. There has not been a professional hockey league team there before. But knowing that it is a place for winter sports, it is a place where I think this environment will succeed. So it's not like, you know, having a team in Atlanta, so to speak. So it was interesting. And he was definitely at one point a little tired. He said to me, because, you know, I was driving up since 2 a.m. because this deal got together very late. And I said, really? Like, you just assume these things happen for months. And all of a sudden, the rest of us in the media find out about it. He said, no, this got to end at 2 in the morning. So it was a late-breaking news, so to speak. And I think he was a little worn out, but happy to get it done and excited to get a new team in Utah.
Yeah, no, it was a very good interview, and I wanted to make sure we touched on, even though it was a few days ago. And another thing I wanted to make sure that we got to, even though it was a few days ago, was this Aaron Boone ejection last week that we didn't cover well enough, where he got tossed from a game because the umpire, and it was Hunter Wentelstedt, heard
That's
someone
such
chirping.
A good umpire name.
It is a great, and he looks like a Hunter Wentelstedt, actually.
Such a good umpire name.
He tossed Yankees manager Aaron Boone from a game because he heard complaints coming from the Yankees dugout, only it wasn't Aaron Boone. It was a fan sitting above the Yankees dugout. The best part of this whole thing isn't the ejection or Boone freaking out. It's that Wendelstedt refused to apologize afterward and doubled down and said that, you know, he pretty much deserved it. Walk us through exactly what's going on here and why this dynamic exists, because for the umpire not to apologize for clearly making a mistake, there's got to be something more at play here, right?
For sure, Mike. Listen, of course, Boone's my buddy. We've worked together 5 years at ESPN at Baseball Tonight for years. So, of course, I'm always in his corner no matter what. So I'll say that to be clear. But in this instance specifically, he was completely wrong. I mean, you know, Boone now has a reputation for being a guy who is emotional and will always stick up for his players. That's one of the reasons why he's so popular among his players. Now, as you know, when the word gets around the umpire, it's, oh, that's the guy who berates umpires. He's known for taking it too far. So I do think sometimes reputation can hurt you, which, by the way, is hilarious if anyone ever has met Aaron Boone for more than 5 minutes. He's like literally one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. So I never thought of him as a guy with a hair-trigger temper. He's somebody I never heard curse ever, never heard him use profanity. So clearly something happens when you step between the white lines and you're trying to win in competition and all the rest of it. But I think what happens is umpires go, okay, Booney's the type to really push guys far. He says a lot of things we don't care for. So maybe there's a, so to speak, an itchy trigger finger, right, to toss him. Having said that, this is one of the most absurd ejections I've ever seen in my life. Like, as you said, he didn't say anything. I've watched it like 10 times. You hear Hunter say, "That's enough, Aaron." And he goes, "Okay," because Booney was saying something. He's completely quiet. And he goes, "That's it, Aaron." And then you see Booney lose his mind, correctly so. And, of course, you've got like the Zapruder film with a guy in the blue shirt behind him. Mistakes happen, okay? I get it. If I was at a Major League Baseball game, if I was an umpire, you hear different voices. I think Aaron has like a specific voice. Okay, I could recognize Booney's voice. But, sure, something else gets said, I toss him. As you said, Mike, the part that's unforgivable that I don't get is how you don't apologize. Right, real simple. Go, "Hey, you know what? I got tired of the barking, and I thought it was from Booney. It wasn't from him. That's on me. But ultimately, you know, I don't like the fact that he talks too much." Like, whatever, you could couch it however you like, right? You can still apologize and defend yourself. My wife's an expert at that. "I'm sorry I upset you, but clearly I was valid to do so because blah, 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 blah." So Hunter Wesson could have said, "Yes, I shouldn't have ejected him because he didn't say the word. But you know what? What he had said prior to that was unnecessary. I didn't like the treatment of us prior to that." Whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
As you said, to not apologize for the ejection to me is just I don't get it. I really don't.
I haven't seen
and,
a guy.
And Booney said that, by the way, post-game. He just said that's not fair. Like, clearly, there's fair and there's not fair, and that was not fair.
I haven't seen a guy jump out of the dugout like that since George Brett, I think. That was an incredible surprise by Aaron Boone. And he didn't say anything. It was hilarious. The two guys were just staring at each other with those cop sunglasses. Just like,
yeah. But Jason, it's like that feeling of being in class, right? You know, the teacher turns her back. And then
totally.
She throws a spitball. I go, "That's it, Brof, you're out." You go, "It wasn't me. I swear it wasn't me." You're so exasperated. That's what it was like.
But in my case, it would have been me. I'd just be acting. How many games are the Chicago White Sox going to win this year?
Oh, my God. Right? Remember last week, Mike said to me, "Who's going to be the worst of those teams?" And I said, "Absolutely going to be the White Sox." So I feel great about that prediction after this past week. I'm going to say that. I don't think they'll get to quite the 62 Mets, but God. I mean, they're obviously a 100-loss team. Can we go 110 losses? I feel pretty good about that prediction. If I said 52-110, that feels about right. I mean, it's really painful when you have your veteran players who are generally hurt or, you know, ineffective. So Luis Robert is actually a great player, but he's hurt. And then there are other guys that have just been ineffective, Eloy Jimenez, Joao Moncada, et cetera. And then as far as, you know, the signings, they signed Benintendi, who's been a terrible free agent signing. He's done nothing for them for a couple of years now. And their pitching is terrible. Like, if you'd asked even a casual baseball fan a few weeks ago, "Hey, who's on the White Sox?" they would have said Dylan Cease. Of course, he went to the Padres. Now their pitching is in shambles. I mean, there's literally unrecognizable names. And, again, it's not like it's a young team. Like the Expos in the early 90s, you go, "Oh, these guys are going to be great. They just need a little bit of seasoning." Or like the A's of the 2000s. This is just a bad team. It's just overpriced veterans and an unproven young players. So it's painful right now on the South Side. Thankfully for Chicago, they got the number one pick tonight, so they're focused on the Bears, and Caleb's going to be their hero, former Heisman Trophy winner, because there's not much brewing right now on the South Side if you're a sports fan, especially if you're a baseball fan.
We are speaking to Adnan Virk from MLB Network, NHL Network, and the Cinephile Podcast here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Adnan, before we let you go, movie time, movie talk. Andy wanted to know if you've seen Civil War yet. Is that a yes or a no?
Yeah, by the way, because Jason had asked me the previous week, 2 weeks ago, and I said I meant to see it. And then Andy mentioned it off air last week, so I thought you guys might bring it up. So thank you for bringing it up. Yes, I did, and I enjoyed it. It's intense and unnerving. I you know, it's one of the rare movies that I went into. I don't even know if I saw a trailer. When Jason mentioned to me a couple weeks ago, I'm like, yep, it's on my radar. I know Garland directed it. He's really good. Did Ex Machina. I may have seen a trailer, but normally, fellas, like, I have a little bit of understanding going in. This one, I knew nothing, and I also hate the fact there's so many trailers and commercials. So now I'm at the point I time it to miss that. So to be specific, 11:30 a.m. Eastern was the start time. I purposely show up at like 11:45, 11:50. Now, I may have misjudged it by a few minutes because when I walked in, the movie had already started, so I was like, that is an annoying feeling. I've already missed probably the first scene. I waited until the end credits, and I saw in order of appearance they mentioned Nick Offerman. I go, okay. I texted a buddy. He'd seen it. He explained the first 5 minutes. Long way of saying, it's the kind of movie which is very much of its time because it is a civil war, how America right now is split between right and left and, you know, how poisonous that can be. It's well acted, Kristen Wiig and others. And, Unnerving's the word for it, man. It's a good film. I really enjoyed it.
And I got to ask you real quick, because I've seen it. It's been gone viral a little bit. The Steve Martin documentary that's out there right now. Because the clip of him reminiscing about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with John Candy, right? John Candy, obviously.
John Candy.
Canadian legend. I know that you were taught. What exactly were you guys discussing at length on your podcast about it?
No, thanks for bringing it up, Mike. So it's two parts. So the first part is just Steve Martin in the 70s. Now, again, I didn't, you know, I wasn't alive back then, so I didn't really know his comedy back then. And having watched it, it's weird. You know, when I watch old George Carlin stuff, like, oh my God, this guy's brilliant. I could watch everything. The old Steve Martin stuff, I didn't find particularly funny. Like, it's just kind of corny and that wild and crazy guy. And, you know, he's just silly characters and stuff. But that was essentially the first part, how Steve Martin became this huge sensation. Now, again, I recognize the popularity. He was selling arenas like Fleetwood Mac. So trust me, I respect the fact he was a comedic genius. The second part, though, I thought was brilliant because that shows Steve Martin today. And then it kind of goes through some of his movies, obviously Parenthood, Father of the Bride, and arguably my favorite comedy is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So I'm waiting for what content he's going to give us. And it was that only that one scene, but you're right, it was so memorable what he did. He's looking at a bunch of scripts in one of his offices, and he says, you know, I realized when I started making movies, I'd have to make eight to make one good one. He goes, such is the infrequency of a good film. And so he's looking at all the scripts, and he just pulls up Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. And he goes, specifically for this movie, he goes, you know, I love John. He goes, he was a very sensitive guy. He was a very loving guy. We loved each other. He said, there's a great speech at the end. Of course, we've all seen it. We all know and love that movie when they're at the train station.
Right.
You know, all John Candy says is, I don't have a home. Marie's been dead for 8 years. But Steve says, no, it's like a page and a half of dialogue. And he goes, it was so powerful. He goes, I was in tears. And John Hughes cut it from the film. And he goes, you know, I don't know what the reasoning is. Maybe just it's timing-wise. You want things to pick things up. But it was incredibly delivered. And as part of my thought process, fellas, that John Candy, along with being Canadian legend, Argos fan, obviously a comedic great, but a really good dramatic actor. Like, I watched JFK again last year. He's great in that. He's only like two or three scenes, but he's fantastic.
He's
like,
hilarious
John Candy's
in that.
A really good actor.
Yeah,
he's a really good actor. And you can find it online, the actual speech. I read it out loud to myself, and I started getting choked up. Like, it's an incredible monologue, and I could picture John Candy, who was so unforgettable, as Del Griffith delivering that. And I said, man, I wish there was a cut of that film we could actually see that. But it's a really good documentary, particularly the second part. And, of course, speaking of Canadians, Marty Short. I mean, Steve Martin and Martin Short are so close, and there's great stuff there from Marty Short, who is as proud a Canadian as you'll meet. He's so funny.
Adnan, you're the best, buddy. Thanks for doing this. As always, enjoy the rest of the week. We'll do this again next week.
Mike, Jason, thanks so much. I have to mention, this is Take Your Kids to Work Day, so I apologize. I'm a little frazzled right now here at MLB Network, but kids are running amok and having a blast. Take care. We'll talk soon.
See you, buddy. Awesome. Have a good one. Adnan Virk from MLB Network and the Cinephile Pod. He had Jeff Garland on his podcast this week. He gets some really good guests on his podcast, by the way. Be sure to check it out. Apple, Google, Spotify, all that stuff. Adnan Virk from MLB Network here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
So I flagged a couple of texts into the Dunbar Lumber text line. And if you want to text in, 650-650. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street. Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Buterson, Vancouver. Online at dunbarlumber.com. Torgy texts in, watching the Oilers power play drives me nuts as a Canucks fan. We have a boatload of talent as well, but the way the Oilers keep working to the middle of the ice and finding that soft spot is exactly what we do not do. Well, the other thing the Oilers power play has is Draisaitl, who has an absolutely lethal one-timer, and from like a crazy angle. He can be down there on like the goal line and pick a corner.
Kelly Rudy, during one of the intermissions recently, said that one of the particular spots where he can shoot it from angle-wise, he says he's the best to ever do it. Like, it's just almost unstoppable. The angle, the speed.
Was it game one that he just went like roof from that, and like Talbot's kind of like
I mean, like, Edmonton's
what am I supposed to do here?
Edmonton's on a different plane when it comes to the power play, because they've got so many high-end dynamic guys, and they can snap those low down cross crease passes better than anyone. And you add a guy like Zach Hyman into the mix, who's such a good finisher. Everyone says, well, he's 2 feet away from the net. But it takes, you know, timing and hands and strength and all those things to score those goals, right? I mean, it's not...
I mean, it helps that he plays with
it helps David. That he got a guy spoon-feeding him the passes. But yeah, it
makes a lot of money, too. Comes from a rich family. That's part of it.
Oh, God.
I do understand. By the way, we're going to gloss over that.
Couldn't resist.
Toronto on the power play, if you want to talk about a team that's loaded with high-end guys that should be scoring, Toronto was 0 for 5 on the power play last night against Boston through three games, 1 for 11. I mean, you want to talk about sometimes the most obvious reasons are staring you in the face. So everyone's talking about that Boston-Toronto series and the reason that Toronto's trailing 2-1, and it's Mitch Marner's disappearing act, it's the goaltending hasn't been good enough, it's Brad Marchand's gotten in their heads. How about the fact that you've gone to the man advantage 11 times and you have one measly goal to show for it?
Yeah, they've spent an average of almost 7 minutes per game on the power play.
People are saying, well, they're not getting the calls. Well, no, Marchand's not getting the calls against them. You're still getting opportunities on the power play. You can't have your cake and eat it too. Like, yeah, you're getting the power play out there. Well, it has to be Brad Marchand getting called for the penalties. Like, they're getting chances, they're getting looks.
But the Canucks need to score on the power play too. They haven't scored on the power play. They're 0 for 6, and they've been on the power play an average of 6 minutes in each of these games.
That's
important. And they haven't scored yet. I still don't know. I think this was Jamie Dodd that brought it up when we were working together. God, those were great days. He's such a good guy. He's going to be at the watch party on Sunday, right? Really looking forward to catching up with Jamie Dodd.
Okay, that's enough.
And he said, what is the Canucks' bread and butter play on the power play? And this was kind of like, I was like, wow, that's a good question. I wish I worked with a host on a regular basis that would bring up good questions like that. Because I think the Canucks' bread and butter play when they had Horvat was Horvat in the bumper spot,
correct,
right? They work it down low.
Now, what's a bumper spot?
It's the left point.
Got it.
No. It's, where the Horvat spot.
I know.
They would move it down there. They would work it down low, and they would try to get it to Horvat, and Horvat had a good shot, and he made a lot of money off that shot, and he was a good finisher. What is the play that the Canucks are trying to set up?
That's a good question.
That,
JT Miller going downhill. That's the one they're trying to set up, seems like, right?
Yeah, but they have them on both sides now. Like,
is that the correct answer? Please tell me I'm right.
I don't think there is one.
Okay.
I think they're searching for one. And I honestly don't think they have it. It seems to be a lot of like, all right, we'll pass it around and see if something comes up.
I think they should put PD net front again. Make him earn it. Make him go through the physical punishment. Make him feel the playoffs.
Okay, I've got a take. Okay. I've got a hot take. All right.
Wow.
And this is something that's going to be special coming from me.
Okay.
I think PD has a big game tomorrow.
Ooh.
In a good way.
Game three,
in
big
a good
game
way.
PD. Okay.
I think before he scores
on his own net, it's your fault.
Well, he's already did that. I've watched that replay like 100 times. Just like, was it off Sisson's sticks or Petey's? Like, I think it was Petey's.
Kind of felt like he scored his own net.
Yeah, like Sisson's might have like pushed his stick in. At any rate,
don't cool off. Keep going.
Okay.
Hot take.
So one of my big concerns with Petey, especially down the stretch, was that the puck just wasn't on his stick enough, and he wasn't involved enough. And my point for game two was, yes, he made a lot of wrong decisions out there, but at least he was involved. And at least the puck was on his stick. He could have scored a bunch of times. Should have scored at least once on that open net. I don't even think he was getting those chances before. So in some ways, unless he goes into a massive like shame spiral after game two, I do in a way think there was something positive from game two to take. And I just think that he might have a big game in game three. Here's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that game two, where I think we can all agree he was the main focus after the game, I'm hoping that was the version of rock bottom in Carolina that we saw a couple of years ago when, remember that game in Carolina in the regular season, like Petey's like falling down.
Sure.
And I can't remember exactly what the play was behind the net, but like it just didn't go well for Petey. And then his next game, he had a big game, and then he kind of came out of that. I really do think that Petey, now I don't know if this is a good thing for your star player to have this, but I just think he needs one thing to go well for him, and then you might see a turnaround for him. Now, part of this is me actually thinking, I think this could happen for Petey, and part of me is just being like a little bit hopeful.
Yeah, you want it to happen.
I want it to happen. But I think here's the thing, like there's always that saying, like it's always darkest before dawn. That game two.
Batman.
Yeah. That game, too, was pretty dark for Petey, but at least he was involved. Mm-hmm. At least he was, you know, people will say, well, he's not shooting the puck. He was. It was just getting blocked a lot, right? Or he missed the net. He had 9 shot attempts. And I just think, you know, if there's a game that can catapult him into having a good reaction to a bad game, like that rock bottom in Carolina. I love saying that, by the way. Rock bottom in Carolina.
It's a great show on The Simpsons, Rock Bottom.
Yeah, well,
no, rock, Mr. Simpson. No,
rock
no.
bottom. It's like, yeah, it's like rock bottom took, like, you know, sometimes they do, like, this weekend we'll be in Carolina. Rock bottom goes to Carolina.
Mr. Betterson, your silence will only further incriminate you.
Okay. So that's my hot take.
No, I agree with you, though. Tomorrow,
I think Pedersen's going to have a big game.
All it takes is one big goal from Petey. That opens the floodgates,
now,
and he's back, baby.
Now, I reserve the right, if Petey has a bad game
in Game 3.
I reserve the right, if Petey has a bad game in Game 3, to really rip him, because not only will that be bad for the team.
Be bad for you.
It'll embarrass me. Right? Like, he'll not
which
only
is really
be like,
more important.
Which is more important, right? Like, now my ego is involved in this, and we all know that's a powerful force.
Canucks coverage on Sportsnet 650 in the Halford and Brough Show. All Canucks playoff coverage is brought to you by Sky Avenue Kitchen and Lounge. Discover Surrey's newest luxury dining experience. Experience the richness of Canadian cuisine prepared by a Michelin-recommended chef. Ooh. Reserve your table today at skyavenue.com. Coming up, Katie Strang from The Athletic next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
The prospect of playing in a college rink for another 3 to 5 years just wasn't fair to the players. And frankly, it wasn't fair to the other teams in the league. And while Alex Morello, the owner of the Coyotes, is committed to building new arena, he ultimately agreed that it was in everybody's best interest that the Coyotes become inactive.
7:32 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. That voice you just heard, NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman talking about, I don't even know how to describe it, Arizona Coyotes currently inactive owner, Alex Morello. That really rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? We're going to talk to Katie Strang in a moment here for more on Alex Morello. Before we do that, I need to do a couple pieces of business. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in Hour 2 of the program. Hour 2 is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made. To the phone lines we go. Very happy to have our next guest back on the program. It's Katie Strang from The Athletic here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Katie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, guys. How are you?
We're good. Nice to talk to you again. Thanks for taking the time to do this. We want to start by going back a little bit. So I was scrolling through your Twitter timeline, and you set up the piece as, the Arizona Coyotes are gone, leaving fans heartbroken, players uprooted, and employees worried about their jobs. Don't mistake Alex Morello's role in the center of it all. So when did you first start digging into, investigating, reporting Alex Morello and started writing about him? Can you let our listeners know?
Sure. Yeah, I think it would have been around September 2020. And the reason why is I got tipped off that they were late, or I guess delinquent, in paying out a number of their players' signing bonuses that were due, you know, I think on July 1st, that it had sort of like taken some time and some pushing from probably both agents and the players' union to get those bonuses paid. So that's kind of like the first red flag that was ever, you know, brought to my attention. And as I started digging from there, it became immediately pretty clear that it was not an isolated incident, but rather, you know, I think a pattern of larger, more concerning behavior.
So who did you chat with to find out how Alex Morello goes about his business and runs his business, not just the Coyotes, but his other interests?
Yeah, so I think I talked to over 50 people who worked, you know, for the Coyotes, people that did business with the Coyotes, former employees, people that had done business with Morello in other sort of aspects of his business portfolio, people within the community, vendors, contractors, basically anyone that would have intersected with him in any professional capacity or business transaction. You know, I tried to canvass as many people to get as accurate of a read about, you know, how they go about doing business and essentially how they go about treating people.
And how does he treat people?
Not very well. You know, I think what we were able to discern pretty quickly is that there was a pattern of behavior of not paying bills, of having, you know, using sort of proxies or, you know, people from these various organizations that work for him to either, you know, give pushback about bills or try to whittle people down on bills and try to, you know, pay bills at a discounted rate, or to like just completely avoid paying bills and telling people to take them to court and, you know, just sort of hang that specter of litigation and just hope people either fold and accept much less than they were contractually owed, or, you know, a lot of people don't have the resources to get embroiled in litigation, and that idea really scares them. So we started to notice that this was not, like I said, anomalous. This was a feature of their business practices. And that extended to people that they were contracting with, vendors, so people outside of their corporate sphere, but then also people internally, too. I mean, there was litigation even from a former employee about wage theft, for example.
Mm-hmm. And what did Alex Morello think of your reporting?
I don't think he liked it very much. I mean, I remember the day the story ran, they released some very, very lengthy statement, I think accusing me of, like, harassing employees and probably a bunch of other unsavory things, and threatening litigation. It was interesting because I feel like that was one of the first pieces that we approached in a very holistic way. So, you know, as we were doing this reporting, we were encountering some of these same tactics that we were writing about, right? Like the bullying, the threatening, the intimidation tactics. And so we really tried to incorporate that into the story. And so we wrote about this guy that's like bullying people, threatening with litigation, all the things. And like almost all of those things were sort of encapsulated in that statement. So for us, it was like kind of a nice Streisand effect, in the sense that like anyone that hadn't read the story before then went to go read the story. And then also like he kind of did our work for us. Like we told people, hey, this is who this guy is. I think he showed that very clearly in the way that he reacted to this story. And I can just tell you that, like, we never heard a peep from their lawyers.
Right.
So I think it was a lot of bark and not a ton of bite.
We're speaking with Katie Strang, a reporter for The Athletic, who's been writing a lot about Alex Morello and the Arizona Coyotes. So I guess my next question is, when the NHL and the Board of Governors approved the sale of the Coyotes to Alex Morello, did they know any of this?
I don't know exactly how much they knew. What I do know is that he had gone down this road years prior with the NBA, and they had, you know, essentially like almost consummated the deal to the point where I think he had announced, I believe it was in 2011, it might have been 2012, he had announced like that he had purchased a team, but it still required board approval, and essentially it fell apart in the final months, for a couple of different reasons. You know, if you ask people inside the NBA. They will tell you that they felt it was both too highly leveraged of a deal and that they had doubts that he could withstand operating costs and losses. You know, if you ask their side, I think they just said that they felt like the terms or the financial parameters had changed to a degree that they were not satisfied with. But either way, you know, he essentially had a team and it fell apart. So, you know, the NBA, I think, ultimately decided not to get in bed with him. And I can't imagine that's not something that the NHL was aware of.
I'm not naive enough to think that, you know, when people accumulate massive wealth and they're involved in these very high level like construction practices and businesses, that there might be some unsavory business practices along the way. My question is, did you get a sense that Morello's actions were way beyond the pale compared to maybe some other owners in the National Hockey League or some other high profile people who were involved in the NHL at executive level? Like, basically, were the Coyotes doing things that, you know, despite the owner's wealth, that it was just even too much for the NHL to turn a blind eye to?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're making a really good point here, which is that, you know, there's probably a number of owners who, upon closer scrutiny of their business practices, you know, could have some, you know, things that maybe we don't approve of or maybe aren't, you know, the most sort of humane way about going about their business, et cetera. But, I mean, I would say the rate at which I was hearing complaints about the, you know, Coyotes atmosphere and sort of like the internal workplace culture and all the different ways it was manifesting, both on their business side, their hockey operations side, you know, the paranoia, the toxicity. I mean, I would say that was certainly evident to me that it was beyond the pale, because that's not stuff that I was hearing about other teams.
So, Katie, I guess this all begs the question, does the NHL really expect Alex Morello to own the Arizona Coyotes once again? I mean, I know he insists that he's still the owner of the Arizona Coyotes, but does he really expect them in this window of opportunity that he's been granted to build a new arena, pay back the $1 billion for an expansion team in the NHL, and own the Coyotes going forward?
I mean, I highly, highly doubt the league actually expects that to happen. My guess is some of the criterion applied to the reactivation is pretty stringent. And I imagine it's stringent for a reason. I mean, he has a track record of, you know, like talking a big game and not being able to execute. And I think the league is well aware of that. And so I think they put into place certain guardrails and parameters that ensure that unless he does satisfy, you know, those requirements, that they're not going down this road again. And I would just say, like, given my experience covering the team and their business dealings and also their incredible lack of goodwill and credibility within the community, I do not see any scenario in which they pull this off.
What do we all think about Alex Morello actually pocketing hundreds of millions of dollars after all of this in profits?
Yeah, that's something that I talked to quite a few people about, because it did seem to unsettle and not sit well with people, especially those who are more intimately familiar with his business practices. You know, what he told employees when he met with them privately is that, you know, ostensibly that money goes into this, like, as he referred to it, a war chest, right? And that ostensibly that sort of gets reallocated into, you know, bidding on the land and getting this deal done. But I would say, I think even within the four walls of their offices, there's a great deal of scrutiny. So, you know, if you kind of pivot from thinking that he's going to reinvest that money into building an arena and bringing a team back, then I think you'd start to run the numbers and realize that he does make, even, you know, settling his debts would make a pretty smart profit. And I don't think people love that. You know, I had one employee feel like tell me that he felt like, you know, he's run the franchise into the ground. He's really, you know, demoralized a ton of people that have been extremely loyal to that organization, both internally as employees and fans. And so the idea that he walks away with, you know, what I think some people view as a subsidized bailout is, you know, really unsettling to people. I had one person compare it to, you know, a 17-year-old who crashes his car and then gets compensated and rewarded with the keys to a Ferrari.
The headline is, "The Arizona Coyotes are gone. Someone please tell ex-owner Alex Morello." The author is Katie Strang. It's a great piece. I recommend you go check it out on The Athletic right now. Katie, great work as always. Thank you very much for joining us. And thank you for all of this.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Katie Strang from The Athletic here on the Helford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Do you want an update on the countdown clock to the land auction in Arizona?
Boy, do I.
63 days, 3 hours, 23 minutes, and 25 seconds until the land auction.
So the article that she wrote in relation to that kind of renders that entire clock like null and void and moot, because I can't see, with the lack of goodwill that he has with the employees of this inactive team, with local business people, local politicians who clearly want nothing to do with Morello or, honestly, the brand at this point, because it's so battered.
But he can still go out and buy this land in 63 days, 3 hours, 22 minutes, and 52 seconds.
I understand that, but it seems like everyone that he's going to have to encounter along the way for a project of this scope, vendors, construction companies, any everybody that, you know, zoning applications that have to go through every level of government.
I'm kind of cheering for him, though, just because it would be hilarious for the chaos if he actually gets it done and he meets all these requirements and then he gets to the point. He's like, all right, we got the arena. We're ready to roll. Like, let's go.
It is like one of those movies where everyone's an unsavory character and you're like, I don't know who to cheer for, but someone will win in the end.
Can you imagine if he gets shovels in the ground? And I think that I read one of the requirements was the arena has to be, you know, half built or something like that. So he can't just say like, oh, I bought the land, now give me the team back. The arena actually has to be, you know, going. And then like the NHL is like, oh God, what is our out here?
So is the NHL's idea here that they've sort of appeased him with what Katie referred to as a subsidized bailout, and he'll just
They've given him a massive profit,
right? So hold on, let me.
So
finish.
They don't end up in court.
But also, it's like this just might appease him to be like, I don't really need to do all this work to go and win the land auction and buy and build and try and get the team back. I just got a bunch of money. Maybe I'll just be fine.
Well, maybe it's a game of poker and they're calling his bluff, basically, right?
It's not the worst play from the NHL's.
Well, it is if he ends up actually succeeding and doing all the things that he's required to do, because then they have to give him a team back. Right. And then can you imagine what people in Arizona will say? Like, how many people would be signing up for season tickets? There might be a movement to, like, screw him over.
I thought what
does the NHLPA say? Would any players want to go play for this guy?
I thought, and I know it's just Paul Bissonnette and everything, but I thought it was very telling that a guy that used to be employed by the Coyotes on a number of levels and is now one of the most prominent spokespeople for a national rights holder for the NHL went out there and very clearly said, I hope that when this team comes back, it has nothing to do with the current ownership group. Like, that's a big statement. Right? Mm-hmm. We're not talking about, and again, I know who it is, and I know that, you know, he's paid to be flamboyant, controversial, and talk.
He's also a huge Coyotes fan, right?
And he also, again, that's a national rights holder. TNT is in the direct business of working with the NHL.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal.
So in a weird way, I'm kind of cheering for him. Can you imagine if he gets the arena, like, up and running?
I mean, sitting back and eating the popcorn, I'm like, hell yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just, I want to see. If I'm a subscriber to the ultimate chaos, which is why I wanted Vegas to miss the playoffs, then you want to see, if you're just a fan of chaos, you want to see Morello get this done.
Like Gary Bettman dressing up in camo in the middle of the night and then just spreading toxic waste all over that site and then, you know, calling in the
I've said this
the
before.
Feds would be like, oh, this is a toxic, you know, like, we can't build an arena here.
We've said this before. They need a Mike Irvin Trout. They need a fixer. They need a cleaner. It's in the desert. Mm-hmm. He already knows how to work there.
A good thing going, Walter.
They need him to go and do these sorts of things. You can't get your hand. Gary can't get his hands dirty.
No.
You need to hire a
Send
fixer.
Bill.
Yeah, you need to fire a cleaner. That's it. Okay. Or hire a cleaner. Sorry. Okay. I got to do a quick reset here because the show today, I think we've run the gamut here. I mean, we've talked last night's Stanley Cup playoffs, NFL draft, Arizona Coyotes. We did some baseball talk with Adnan Virk. We did some movie talk with Adnan Virk. We've got a lot more to get to, but we've also got a bunch of business that we need to attend to. So a couple things. Watch parties. The Canucks are on the road, obviously, for the next two games. Game 3 is Friday night in Nashville. Game 4 is Sunday afternoon, also in Nashville. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to give away a pair of passes to the Rogers Arena Canucks away game viewing party Friday night, April 26th at Rogers Arena, 4:30. So what this is you can go to Rogers, you can get free tickets because it's $15 a ticket to get in. So free tickets to watch the game on the big screen, game 3, Friday night, 4:30. We're giving these away to the best what we learned. You need to hashtag it WWL and put a ticket emoji into your text. You also get a VIP skate from 11 a.m. to noon on Friday. You also get club seats in a special Rogers section that includes snacks, and refreshments. So that's Friday.
You also get A-Dog as your personal butler at your seats.
That's to be confirmed. But it's still in the works.
I didn't agree to this. He's agreed to use a fake British accent as well.
So that's Friday.
Yeah, Cutwater, sir.
Hashtag it WWL. What did you learn over the last 24 hours in sports? Put a ticket emoji into your text. You can win tickets to the Rogers Arena watch party on Friday. Now, on Sunday, this is totally free. It's open to the public. You don't need to do anything. You just need to show up and have a good time. And you don't even need to have a good time. You can just have an all right time. We're putting the bar low here for expectations. Halford and Bruff, we're going to be watching Game 4 Sunday, 2 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Kitsilano on West Broadway. Most of you know the location. We did our 2022 FIFA World Cup watch parties there as well. It's got three bars. It's got a huge big screen to watch the game on. There's going to be food trucks. I'm pretty sure AJ's Pizza is going to be there as well. Slinging some pie. That's what they call it in the biz.
Yeah, okay.
Slinging some pie. Mm-hmm. Anyway, if you want to come, you can sign up and get tickets. HollywoodTheater.ca. You don't have to have tickets, though. Jess gives us a better count of who's going to be there and how many. But anyway, we're going to be there Sunday, 2 o'clock, Hollywood Theater. If you just want to come and hang out and cheer on the Canucks in Game 4 against Nashville, it's a 2 o'clock puck drop, okay? So that's all your information out there. Watch parties on Friday and Sunday. We will be resetting this throughout the week, so fear not if you missed it right now. Coming up on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650, Thomas Drantz from The Athletic and Canucks Talk is going to join us live from Nashville. We will look ahead to Friday's game. We will answer all of your questions in case you missed it. Rick Tocchet did confirm yesterday that Casey DeSmith is indeed going to start Game 3. In case there was any question about that, moving forward, we can talk about Jason's proclamation that Elias Pettersson is going to have a big game in Game 3.
One guy replied in the inbox and said, I need to be more specific about having a great game.
Would you like to indulge that now?
No.
Okay.
Is this going to be like Biz Nasty's prediction that Marner was going to have a great game for the Leafs?
I didn't see that.
Did he not have a good? Didn't he pick up an assist?
He got a nice assist.
Yeah, okay.
Ooh, that's pretty big.
I think I will be the judge of whether or not he has a great game. But I have a high bar, okay? So if he picks up just one secondary assist or even one assist, I'm not going to be like, wow, what a great game.
Got it.
I think we all know what a great game looks like, okay? And in Game 2, what's the opposite of a great game?
Right, yeah. You can't define it, but you know it.
Yeah.
And you see it. So all that's coming up in the final hour of the program. Thomas Drantz. And then at 8:30, we're doing What We Learns in the giveaway for Friday's watch party. Canucks spreads from Rogers Arena. Finally, all Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Get your keys to an all-star collection of Kubota products at one of their six locations across BC this spring. Visit DLEAMC.com for more. You are listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.